The United States has announced a new package of sanctions against Russia as the war in Ukraine grinds on into its second year. The heads of the European Union and NATO pledge to continue their support for Ukraine in the war with Russia. Also coming up, Palestinians hold massive street rallies across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. Our top story, the U.S. has imposed new sanctions on Russia as Washington continues with a policy that has so far failed to stop the war in Ukraine. The sanctions primarily target banks and the defense industry. According to the White House, the measures will hit over 200 individuals and entities inside and outside Russia. Moscow has been hit with massive and unprecedented sanctions by Washington and its European allies since the start of the war last February. While Moscow says it's coping with the challenges, the attempts to isolate the country have backfired. They have caused inflations in Europe, which is highly dependent on Russian energy. Moscow is one of the largest wheat and energy exporters. It says the sanctions are hampering its exports and pushing up food and energy prices. Ever since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, the European Union has faced widespread accusations of blindly following the US in imposing sanctions on Russia. And this has not come without a cost for the people in Europe. Many, including top politicians, have blamed the subservience for the dire economic conditions in the bloc. Mick Wallace, an Irish member of the European Parliament, sheds more light on the issue.
More and more, we've been playing a very subservient role to the interest of the US, and we are doing things that are not in the interest of the European Union, not in the interest of the people of Europe. And we're making decisions that are good for America, good for NATO, but not good for the people of Europe. The sanctions have had a dramatic impact on the cost of living for the ordinary people of Europe. We've seen huge inflation, we've seen huge price rises, and the sanctions in the last 12 months, I would say, have had more of an impact on the people of Europe than it's had on Russia. The US didn't want Europe buying gas from the Russians in the first place. That for the last couple of years, they tried to block the Nord Stream project. We're now buying filthy LNG gas, frack gas, from the Americans, and at a much greater price. The industry in Germany is having to pay four times more for American LNG than the American industry pays back in America. So how is European business going to compete with American business if we're paying four times more for their LNG than the American companies? It's just absolute madness.
1 year on, the war between Russia and Ukraine is showing no signs of slowing down. The battles are now most intense in the east, including in the Donetsk region. Russia says it has killed nearly 240 Ukrainian soldiers during assaults there in the past 24 hours. Earlier, the deputy chief of the Russian Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, said Russia must win the war. Medvedev added that one of Moscow's goals is to push back threats at the country's borders, even as far away as Poland's frontiers. In turn, the Ukrainian president has pledged to do everything to defeat Russia this year.
We will defeat all threats, shellings, bombs, missiles, kamikaze drones, blackouts, and cold. We are stronger than all of this. It was a year of endurance, a year of compassion, a year of bravery, a year of pain, a year of hope, a year of perseverance, a year of unity, a year of invincibility, a fierce year of invincibility. Its main conclusion is that we have survived, we had not been defeated, and we will do everything to win this year.
Zelensky made the remarks as the first shipment of German-made Leopard 2 tanks arrived in Ukraine from Warsaw. Berlin has also promised to hand over 18 such battle tanks to Kiev. Ukraine has been calling for the tanks to push back against Russia. And Moscow currently controls around a fifth of Ukraine's territory. Over the past year, it has annexed 4 eastern Ukrainian regions after holding referendums there. Kiev and its Western allies have rejected the votes as a sham. With the help of Western military support, Ukraine has been making some advances against Russia. The Kremlin says it launched the war in response to NATO's eastward expansion. However, Kiev and the West say the war was unprovoked. The conflict has so far claimed the lives of tens of thousands of people on either side and displaced millions more. International affairs analyst Gilbert Doctorow tells us how the United States and its allies want a stretched-out war in Ukraine.
A long war, yes, of course the United States wants that. It provoked and pitted Russia and Ukraine against one another in the same way that once upon a time it pitted and provoked Iran and Iraq into a war that was devastating for both sides. This particular war is devastating for one side. Of course, the Russians have casualties, but the Ukrainian casualties have been much more severe because of the obtuse defense of various points which should have been evacuated if the regime in Kiev had any interest in the lives of its own citizens. It doesn't. And so the war was intended to be destructive of Russia's military force because it put Russia against a peer, a country with a military in scale and in training. In the last 8 years, it's been trained and disciplined by NATO instructors. It pitted Russia against a country that was similar in capabilities, if not in scale or size. So the war is being decided on the battlefield. The Russians at this moment seem to have the upper hand on the battlefield, and therefore the likelihood of this going on very long is reasonably low.
The EU and NATO chiefs have vowed to continue military support for Ukraine in its war with Russia. In a press conference in Estonia, Ursula von der Leyen and Jens Stoltenberg added that Russia has failed to achieve its military goals in Ukraine.
From the start of his brutal war, Putin has failed to achieve a single one of his strategic goals. Instead of dividing the European Union, he finds us united and determined to stand by Ukraine for as long as it takes. We must keep giving Ukraine the means to defend itself until the Russians end this war and leave Ukraine. And this is why we stand firmly by Ukraine, as determined as ever, to support Ukraine financially, economically, and militarily, to increase our own defense capabilities, and to increase the pressure on Russia and hold it accountable.
1 year ago, President Putin launched his full-fledged invasion of Ukraine, an illegal war of aggression, in blatant breach of basic international rules. He wanted to break the will of the Ukrainian people, and he wanted to break our unity. President Putin failed. Ukraine stands, and NATO and the EU stand with Ukraine.
And tensions are spiraling on Ukraine's southwest border with Moldova. Russia has warned the West against any actions threatening its peacekeepers in Moldova's breakaway Transnistria region. Moscow says any such action will be considered as an attack on Russia itself. These comments come shortly after Russia claimed that Ukraine is planning an attack on the Russian-speaking territory. The region broke from Moldova's control a year before the collapse of the Soviet Union. Ukraine and Moldova's pro-West presidents have both dismissed the claims, accusing Russia of engaging in provocations. Moldova has also for weeks accused Russia of plotting a coup. Russia has close to 2,000 troops in Transnistria, which is home to a large ammunition depot. Turning elsewhere, tensions remain high in the occupied West Bank after Israel's deadly raid on the city of Nablus last week. In a show of strength and unity, Palestinians have taken to the streets in the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip to condemn the incursion. Earlier, we discussed the issue in our news review program.
On this segment of the program, thousands of Palestinians have poured into the streets across the occupied West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raid on Nablus. The rallies came following an earlier call by the Palestinian resistance group Lion's Den. It urged Palestinians to take to the streets to show the world the resistance is ready to give a rapid response to any Israeli aggression. Ismail Haniyeh, who heads the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement, issued a message lauding the massive street rallies. He said the people of Palestine and the resistance front will not allow anybody to stop the ongoing anti-Israeli uprising across the West Bank. Nearly a dozen Palestinians were killed and more than 100 were injured in the Israeli forces' Wednesday raid on the city of Nablus. A 22-year-old Palestinian youth identified as Mohammad Jawabara also died early Friday. He succumbed to injuries suffered earlier on Thursday during an Israeli attack on Al-Arub refugee camp in the city of Al-Khanil. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have Mona Candy, who's joining us from Ramallah. Also, we have journalist, author, and activist Fra Hughes, who's joining us from Belfast. Welcome to the program. To the both of you, let's start off with Mona. Bring us up to speed on the recent Palestinian rallies that have taken place across the occupied West Bank and also in the besieged Gaza Strip in protest at Israel's deadly raids that have taken place over the past 2 days, most notably the one that took place in Nablus.
We can say that there was kind of a quick response by such demonstrations and protests following the Israeli massacre that was carried out in Nablus, left 10 Palestinians or 11 Palestinians killed in Nablus city, and over 100 Palestinians were wounded. At least two members of the newly created Palestinian resistance group, the Lions Den, were also murdered in Nablus city by the Israeli forces. The Lions Den group called on the Palestinians to go to the street to express their anger and to tell the world that the reprisal and the response would be quick, not only from the Lion's Den, but also from all the resistance groups. And this is what happened. Thousands of Palestinians flocked to the streets in Ramallah, in Tul Karim, in Al-Khalil, in areas around Al-Quds like Shafat and Qalandia refugee camp. In the Gaza Strip, Palestinians were reunited on one thing, that they follow and support the resistance, that the call, the urgent call by the Lions Den for all the Palestinians were responded after midnight to tell the Israeli Ukraine is one thing, that Palestinians are still adverse to the choice of resistance, that the Israeli crimes would have a serious response from the Palestinians, but the Palestinians are waiting maybe for the appropriate response and the planning for the appropriate response. 11 Palestinians were killed, and their blood is very precious for the Palestinians. Of course, one day after this massacre, a general strike was declared. A day of anger was declared on Thursday, as well as today, Friday. Demonstrations and protests had taken place all across the occupied West Bank, and a number of Palestinians were wounded because of confrontations that took place as well.
Stay with you. How do you explain the international silence with regards to the day-to-day crimes that are being carried out by the Israelis? And also, how can this status quo ever change given the unequivocal support of the likes of the United States?
Well, I personally believe that all the people involved in the political kind of elite in the West and Western Europe and in America, which only makes up 13% of the world's population, although the 1% in the West makes up 50% of the world's wealth. You also have the kingdoms of Saudi Arabia and some of the Gulf states created after the Sykes-Picot Agreement by Britain and France to act as their vassal states, to act as parties that would divide the Ummah and divide Arab and Persian states in a continuing, tumbling, falling sectarian kind of quagmire that prevents people coming together. There will be no change on the ground. The resistance and the axis of resistance are possibly the only people who can de facto change things going forward. I think the Israelis are in a very, very, very strong position. And yet, we saw the fall of the Berlin Wall, and sometimes a week in the politics can be a very long time, and things can change quickly. So let's pray that Palestinians will get be treated with dignity and equality and given the nationhood and sovereignty that they so much deserve, and that the pariah state of Israel, because we're moving in the multipolar world, it may be possible that it won't be the West, it won't be America, it could be Latin America, it could be Russia, it could be Iran, Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Africa, which brings Israel to account, because no one in the West, none of the politicians that are bought and paid for by the Zionist dollar, have any interest in protecting Arab, Palestinian, or Persian rights in West Asia.
Thanks a lot, Damono Candiel, joining us from Ramallah. Also, thanks to journalist, author, and activist Fra Hughes, joining us from Belfast.
That brings an end to our World Bulletin. Thank you for staying tuned.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
Tourism. In the name of God, Salam, and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are with you with the third episode of the new series, Food Tourism. In the previous episodes, we talked about food tourism in general and said that Iran is one of the richest countries in the number of foods and drinks. From this episode on, we are going to make you familiar with the foods of different parts of Iran. This time, you will hear on Golestan province and the foods of this province. Hope you'll enjoy it. Golestan province is located in northern Iran, in southeast of Caspian Sea. This province was part of Mazandaran province till 1997, but then it was separated from Mazandaran. Golestan province has an area of nearly 21,000 square kilometers. This province is one of the main sources of Hirkani forest, whose age, in some parts, dates back to the Ice Age. It enjoys rich flora and fauna, and also a variety of ethnicities. Gurgan is the capital city of Golestan province. This city was called Hirkania in Greek and Durjan in Arabic. Interestingly, one of the oldest defensive walls in the world was built in this city during the Sassanid rule over 1,500 years ago. The Great Wall of Gurgan was known as the Red Wall in historical texts too. This wall used to be the second biggest wall after the Great Wall of China, but today a small part has remained from it. The city of Gurgan, like the province, enjoys a variety of foods. Mir Karimi Street in Gurgan is famous for different kinds of kebab. Na'albandan is also an old part of the city, which is, in fact, a traditional bazaar. The district is a good spot for providing suitable culinary items and also eating traditional Iranian foods, such as a special broth called abgusht, rice and a stew, various kinds of kebab, and a handful of homemade and local dishes. The people of Gurgan use vegetables, cucurbits, and legumes like spinach, courgette, and vetch, mung bean, very much in their foods. Some of the popular foods in the region are mash pati, made with vetch, stew of spinach and meat, kadu torshak, sour courgette, ash torshi, sour broth, and ash gazane, nettles broth. The people of Gurgan also greatly use sour additives like pomegranate paste and sour grape juice. In addition to various foods, people in Gurgan enjoy different desserts and sweets, which are served in happy and sad events. Among famous sweets mentioned can be made of halva omaj, poshtezik, sesame seed candy, walnut halva, milky cookies, and benjak noon special bread. After a short break, we will continue with explaining some of these delicious edibles. Shirnoon or milky cookies is one of the sweets that are used in Gurgan in weddings. The sweet is made up of milk and rice. This tasty sweet is put on the tablecloth, which is given to the bride. To make these cookies for four people, you need a cup of rice, 3 cups of milk, a cup of sugar, and a little saffron or roasted turmeric. The rice is rinsed earlier. Then it is mixed with milk and put on fire. When the rice is cooked, we add sugar, and at the end, some vanilla or saffron is also added. After the rice is fully cooked, the ingredients are left to get cool. Then we oil our hands and take small balls. Then we spread them in the palm and fry them in oil. Among popular foods in Gorgan, one can mention kadu torshak or sour courgette. The ingredients for three people include three medium-sized courgettes, one onion, two garlic cloves, two tomatoes that are peeled and chopped, a spoon of tomato paste, and dressing is also added in the end. The recipe for this food, first onion is chopped in small sizes and roasted with turmeric. Garlic cloves are minced and added so that both are fried. The courgettes are sliced and cooked with tomatoes in a pan. Once the courgettes cooked, we take the lid and add tomato paste. Then we leave it to dry up a little. Finally, mint and pepper are added and it is again cooked mildly. Make it and enjoy it.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint. A critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program, Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program, and my two guest speakers in this program, in which we try to focus on criticizing the movie Witnesses, directed by Mark Goodman, with Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser Ibrahim. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Yasser, and welcome to the program.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Again, thanks for having us, inshallah.
You're welcome. And my greetings to you, Sayyid Abdullah.
Wa alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh, and greetings back to you.
Thank you very much. Before me asking you some questions regarding the movie Witnesses, produced in 2021, it's about the Mormon faith, of course. We talked about it in the previous episode. Let's take a listen to another part of this movie, and then I'll be back with its question and the criticism that I get from you two guys. Thank you very much. Let's take a break.
Joseph was anxious to translate the ancient record. He had been given interpreters by the angel. They contained seer stones, but he wasn't sure how to use them. He experimented, achieving a small measure of success. Meanwhile, efforts to steal the plates intensified.
Back to the program, Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jad, hosting this program, and Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser, my two guest speakers in the program, trying to help me criticize the movie Witnesses, directed by Mark Goodman. Well, Sayyid Abdullah, you know, the plates brought by the angel claimed in the movie needed to be translated.
Yep.
So Joseph Smith, one of the three witnesses to the Mormon faith, to the plates who have claimed to have seen the angels, was given the interpreters to translate the ancient record. They contain seer stones.
Yeah.
But he wasn't sure how to use them, of course, especially at the beginning. After experimenting, he achieved a small measure of success, of course. Is this really for real? I mean, like, you know, he was looking at the seer stones, as you could see throughout the movie, to decode and then dedicating it, in fact, to Emma, his wife. Well, and later to Martin Harris, his neighbor, as a scribe. I mean, why all this trouble? Why the hassle? Couldn't the angels reveal the translated text themselves directly?
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the reasons that tells you that this whole story is, there's something wrong with it, right? So if he was supposed to be selected, appointed, or, you know, sent by God, and the angels came to him, how would they bring it in? Something they called it, something Egyptian, I can't remember the word that they used, kind of language that he had to decipher. So that's just God is trying to play a joke on him, I guess. Sure, like, hey, here's a script, good luck deciphering it.
All the religious texts that we have today, like the divine texts or scriptures that we all believe, like the Bible, the Quran, you know, they leave a lot of things to interpretation themselves. Like,
they come in the language of the people, though. They don't come in different languages.
Yeah, but in this movie, as you can see, like, if you leave it to another person interpreting it, like translating it,
he'll make a mockery out of it. That's for sure.
That leaves a lot of things to, like, how do you know, open to interpretation.
Exactly. So how do you know what's in there is correct and sure? So I think this is where the Mormons themselves fall short, in that when it comes to the scrolls themselves, where they weren't, they didn't know which language it was, and they had to decipher it, and they have to, you know, play and tamper with it in order for to see what it could mean. And I think this
is a lot of filters of proxies.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is what they fall short. So, like you said, why didn't a god or the angels give it to them just in the language, which is their English language, the English tongue? But somewhere I've read that with Mormons, though, I think it was an archaeological find rather than given to them by a golden. A golden place by angels. They might have found some scrolls written in a language before English, for example, like, you know, by a civilization that passed. Because they did a claim that the scrolls are the stories or scriptures of the prophets who lived in America, which is, like Brother Yasser said, it is very possible, and I tend to move with that notion as well. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent 124,000. So obviously there definitely would be prophets in America, in Australia, Africa, different places. So it is possible that the prophets before they would have written something. He might have found a scroll in different language. And he thought, well, hold on, this makes a lot of sense. This is nice. Let me just make a religion out of it.
Yeah.
Make some money out of it. And even Whitman himself, when he heard about Mormon, he took a trip and he wanted to say, look, you know, see what's the deal. And I think he found it to be profitable for him as well. And he started this whole mission. But like I said, to be in a different language that you don't know and you have to decipher, then the angel's just being mean.
That's very difficult, in fact, to accept.
It is.
Thank you very much. Let's take a listen to another part of the movie, Witnesses, directed by Mark Goodman. And then we'll be back with his question and the criticism. Don't go away.
But what if God spoke to you? He wouldn't speak about gold.
You don't understand, Father.
Does Joseph speak to God?
There is nothing wrong with our God.
Does our God speak to you?
David.
This is where we hear God.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program with Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Yasser. We are trying to criticize the movie Witnesses, produced in 2021, directed by Mark Goodman. Brother Yasser, you know, there is a conversation, in fact, in one family. The young David Whitmer, the person who's talking to the reporter, and basically it's a flashback to his memories and all what he has seen. Well, Joseph Smith and the Mormon faith founders. The young David Whitmore arguing with his father, who is also a priest too, priest slash father, about why our God in Christianity or in Christian faith doesn't speak to man or doesn't speak to us anymore. Like he's spoken like 1,000, 2,000 years ago, and now he's like silent. The father answers, there's nothing wrong with our God. He already spoke to us through the Bible. Well, the question is it implying that God doesn't need to speak to mankind anymore?
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, oh God, has created a specific system. We currently live in the material plane or the material realm of existence. So first of all, you would ask the question, okay, if that is the case, how would God speak to you? That's the question you would ask somebody who said that. How would God speak to you?
Yeah.
Would he speak to you the way I speak to you? Would he use a voice? Would he speak to you in a manner where, for example, when you and I speak, I have to first of all conceptualize what I want to say in order to get meaning and then transfer that meaning onto words and then to pass it on to you. Is that how God will speak to me and you?
I don't know. I've never spoken to God, or God never spoke to me, so I can't say.
Exactly. So that question itself needs to be dissected. What do you mean that God doesn't speak? Do you mean the way that me and you speak? Or do you mean in other ways? There is a very beautiful concept in Islam, and especially in the higher sciences, where everything that is created, or every single thing that is created, this ring, this phone, this microphone, all of it are the words of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So in every single thing you see, you are being spoken to. You are just deaf. Or we are deaf. It's not that God doesn't speak. It's that we are unable to hear those words. So the first concept, what do you mean that how God doesn't speak? That you have to understand. That okay, fine. If we say that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala or God doesn't speak to you, how would you want him to speak to you? That's the first thing. How in this particular moment in time, being on this particular material realm or this material plane of existence, in order for me to speak, there are certain levels that have to be passed in order for me to transfer what I want to say to you. Does God do that? Like, obviously not, because that'll then bring down the level of his exaltedness. And then the second question is that, is there particular means in this material world that he has spoken to you, but you are just unaware of it? You are deaf to it.
Yes.
So to speak, your so-called inner hearing has been closed. Or our inner hearing rather has not been open. That's a better word. That's another question which we can ask them. Or another question that you can speak to people.
Yeah.
Besides, for example, the Noble Quran or any of the other sacred scripture or the Ahadith and so on, or the traditions of the sages and the wise men and so on. That's a completely different story. But ontologically, existentially, God is always speaking to you. You just don't hear it.
I see. Thank you very much. That's a very nice note, actually, to end this part of this episode. And then by listening to another part of this movie, Witnesses, directed by Mark Goodman, we'll be back and criticize it more. Stay with us.
I've lost my soul. Martin, have you lost the translation? Yes. It is gone, and I know not where. You made an oath to me, and I made an oath to God, and now you have condemned us both. I'm so sorry. You must find those pages.
I cannot.
Go and look again.
I am sorry, Joseph. I have looked every place in my house. I have ripped open beds and pillows. It is gone. It is gone.
God entrusted me, and I entrusted you, and the work we have done is in vain.
What will become of his work, Martin? What will become of God's work?
Dear God, what have I done?
Were the pages ever found?
No.
So like the plates, they just disappeared.
You're a skeptical man, Mr. Kelly.
I'm a reporter.
Where do you think the Book of Mormon came from?
I don't know. I haven't really given it much thought.
Back to the program Viewpoint, the movie critique program on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Brother Yasser and Sayyid Abdullah, my guest speakers. Sayyid Abdullah, you know, Martin Harris, in that part of the movie, lost the translations given to him by Joseph Smith. And he came to Joseph hat in hand. Well, and Joseph rebuked him very hard. So if that is true, if we take it for granted, where did the Book of the Mormon come from?
Very good question. If they lost the script, then when did the Book of Mormon came from? We have the same issue in Islam, though, right? Where we, some Muslim sects, they claim that pieces of the Quran or ayat of the Quran were emitted or eaten by chicken or what have you. But we have the actual manuscripts. Same thing with Christianity. Most of it has been lost, but there are original manuscripts to prove that these books are authentic. With the Mormons, for example, they have nothing to prove that it is the authentic, the real thing. So even if you look at the Book of Mormons itself, it is just pretty much they would come with the Old Testament, with the Torah, the New Testament and the Old Testament, and then they add their own. So they have a thing about maybe 15 chapters in the Mormon book, where it is just a mixture of the Bible. Old and the New Testament, yes. Basically. Mm-hmm. So they haven't brought anything forward.
Of course, later in the movies, they try to somehow justify this by like translating some other parts. Like Joseph is trying to do this by dictating it, in fact, to Oliver to write down as a scribe.
Yeah, so basically, they simply put, look, they just made their own as they were going through it. That's the only explanation that I can find in this regard. I mean, you don't have any manuscripts. You claim that it's lost. You don't have anything.
And God gave you one opportunity and you lost it.
And you lost it. No, I mean, God is a bully to begin with because he gave to them a different language anyway.
Yeah.
So he was bullying them.
Yeah.
And they tried their best and then they lost it. So, mm-hmm. You know, a tough luck. So they said, look, we have to come up with something. So let's just bring the Old Testament, the New Testament, and just add a few chapters of our own and we'll call it a day.
Okay, thank you very much. That's a very nice note to end this episode on. Thank you very much for listening to this program, Viewpoint, on IRIB English Radio. We try to focus on the critique of the movie Witnesses, produced in 2021, directed by Mark Goodman. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You will see the plates.
The Lord has declared it.
When I hear that trumpet sound, you're gonna get up out of the ground. Ain't no grave. You're gonna hold my body down.
I lost that soul.
Why is this happening, Joseph? Did you not see God? Did he not speak to you?
Yes, but he doesn't speak to me now.
This time, Mark, we will listen.
There ain't no grave. Gonna hold my body down.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish. We'll be right back.
in the limelight.
The Zionist regime forces have violently ransacked cells of Palestinian prisoners in their Ramon prison before transferring dozens of them to an unknown location, demonstrating once again that the Tel Aviv regime does not shy away from using repressive measures against Palestinian inmates. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Press TV noted, according to the Palestinian Prisoners Society, Israeli regime troops raided Section 3 of the detention center and used pepper spray on Palestinian prisoners. The advocacy group added that some 80 prisoners were transferred from the Ramon jail to another unknown location. The Asra Media Office, AMO, another Palestinian prisoners' rights group, said Israeli forces fired tear gas canisters, stun grenades, and rubber bullets at the prisoners before transferring them to another jail. There was no immediate information about injuries among the Palestinian detainees. The report prompted the Gaza-based Hamas resistance movement to denounce the vicious assault. It held the Zionist regime fully responsible for protecting Palestinian prisoners, stressing that such attacks and violations are carried out systematically. Hamas spokesman Abdul Latif Qanu said in a press statement that Israeli acts of aggression and crimes would not manage to undermine Palestinian prisoners' willpower. He called on Palestinians from all walks of life to stand in solidarity with the inmates in order to achieve their rights and freedom. Voicing his group's full solidarity with Palestinian prisoners, Qanu said suppressing Palestinian prisoners and depriving them of their basic human rights will only make them more determined to continue their struggle. More than 7,000 Palestinian prisoners are currently held in some 17 Israeli jails, with dozens of them serving multiple life sentences. Palestinian detainees have continuously resorted to open-ended hunger strikes in an attempt to express their outrage at the detentions and harsh conditions in the Zionist regime's jails. Senior Palestinian officials say the Zionist regime must be held accountable for its persecution of Palestinian people, including its mass and arbitrary detentions. Palestinian inmates have also been subjected to systematic torture, harassment, and repression all through the years of the Zionist regime's occupation of the Palestinian territories. Also, according to the website of Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, Palestinian prisoners in the Zionist regime jails are in their eighth day of rising up in a collective call to action demanding justice and liberation. They have announced an escalating program of a struggle leading up to 22 of March, the first day of Ramadan, when prisoners have declared they will launch a collective hunger strike. The prisoners' movement has risen up in response to repeated attacks by the occupation regime aimed at rolling back everything that has been won by the prisoners through decades of a struggle, from preparing their own food in bakeries to having more than 4 minutes to shower. Further, these daily attacks inside the prison are combined with escalating political assaults, including the passage by the Zionist Knesset of law designed to strip citizenship from Palestinians from occupied Palestine 48 and force them into statelessness if they receive financial support from Palestinian entities. Even this new legislation pushed by Zionist far-right forces was an act of revenge after the Palestinian people and the world witnessed the joyous homecoming of Karim and Maher Yunus after 40 years behind the Zionist regime's bars. In a statement, the Higher National Emergency Committee of the Palestinian Prisoners Movement declared, "In light of these challenges, we have decided to embark on a series of steps that begin with disobedience and end with an open hunger strike on the first day of Ramadan, bearing freedom as our sole demand. Everyone must carry this message of ours and our voice, as we can no longer tolerate the continued abuse against us day and night. The attack on our dignity and the dignity of our women prisoners. This strike is titled Freedom or Martyrdom. Will be waged by every capable prisoner of all factions, and we will engage in this strike with unified demands and unified leadership, which we also want to see outside, and this unity is the main guarantor of the success of our struggle." Another statement followed on Saturday, February 18th, by the prisoners serving life sentence. "As we go through this battle of dignity, we raise an open appeal to our people, all of our people, from the guns of the resistance and the revolution to the leadership ranks, to all of the factions, parties, forces, and movements, to respond to our voice and break our chains by standing behind us and supporting us. While we are ready to take steps of a struggle, the main solution to our issue is liberation by the same means by which the resistance and the revolution have liberated hundreds who preceded us in the path of pain. We continue to walk, carrying the stake of our just cause with our chains for many years, which for most of us have reached 2, 3, or even 4 decades. These have been a march in which we have increased our faith in the justice of our cause, and we hope we will soon reach the achievement of our freedom and emancipation at the hands of our people who have never forsaken, a revolution that we have never abandoned, and a resistance that lives within us." The Higher National Emergency Committee of the Prisoners' Movement called for a day of anger on Friday, February 24th, in support of the prisoners and the struggle of Palestinians in Al-Quds fighting back against ongoing attacks, confiscation of their property, and demolition of their homes. "Our battle has begun and will not stop except with our freedom. The jailer wanted to fight us for our most basic rights, and we will respond to him by demanding our complete freedom," they said. Last Friday, February 17th, the prisoners engaged in a sit-in following Friday prayers in all the prison yards, announcing that the state of alert and mobilization was intensifying. The prisoners have begun wearing their brown prison uniforms, refusing to exit their rooms for counts and security checks, banging on the windows and bars of their rooms, and refusing to go out to the exercise yards. Sick prisoners have begun boycotting the prison clinics themselves, notorious for medical neglect and inappropriate statements. Palestinian women prisoners in Damon prison have also taken protest steps, with 6 women prisoners wearing the brown prison uniforms sat down in the prison yard and raised a handmade banner reading, "No bread or water, we want freedom." The 6 Palestinian women and girls who were subjected to penalties while the occupation included Nafet Hamad, Shatila Abu Ayada, Tahrir Abu Saria, Falisti Najim, Azhar Asaf, and Asil Al-Titi, their fellow women prisoners, pledged to continue to close the sections until all penalties imposed on the six are lifted, and emphasized that they are an integral part of the prisoners' movement. As the mobilization of the prisoners escalates, the Zionist prison administration is attempting to suppress their struggle by further intensifying the repression directed against the prisoners. On Monday, February 20th, a large force of repressive units invaded several sections in Gibbola prison, confiscating electrical appliances from inside the prisoners' room. These repressive units are notorious for provoking the prisoners, ransacking their belongings, and turning the rooms upside down, often in the middle of the night, in a deliberate exercise of repression. Also on February 21st, repressive units stormed Section 3 in Ramon prison, firing stun grenades, tear gas, and rubber-coated metal bullets at the prisoners before forcibly transferring 80 prisoners to other areas, including isolation cells, while others were transferred to Section 10 in Nafar prison. The Zionist Regime Occupation Prison Administration informed the prisoners that they would be subject to various collective punishments in response to their disobedience, including the closing of the canteen, prison store, cutting off hot water in the bathrooms, locking the showers, closing morning exercise yards, and shacking prisoners leaving their sections for any reason, including those in need of medical care. In Megiddo, Ofer, and other prisons, basic electrical tools and heating coils have been confiscated from the prisoners' rooms, and their exercise time has been cut. In Afar prison, a large number of ill prisoners were denied their medications, including diabetes, who need insulin.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.